My name is Grant Vermeer, a member of the Crown Refs community. My first year as a high school official, that's when I found out about the Crown Refs community. Having my military background, I love being a part of teams. I want to be a part of a group that has high standards, that holds each other accountable, but also supports and loves each other, and has a desire for everyone in the group to grow. If you're a young referee or someone who loves refereeing and wants to be a part of a group, this is an amazing community for you. I feel like I've gotten better as an official. I've had a community and friends and support through this process, which can otherwise be a little bit lonely as you're on the road a lot. The culture is amazing in here. Make sure to come check it out.
Serve the game.
To join our community, simply go to patreon.com/crownrefs to choose your tier, or you can schedule a one-to-one call with me directly if you email me at crownrefs@gmail.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
So have you been enjoying the community so far? I know we spoke last week, touch base when you first joined, but and I know you were digging into the archives, so I was happy to hear about that, but give me some of your feedback.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed it a lot. Obviously, going in there, I think the community has been really good, especially like that one time I asked if anyone in New Jersey was had any like leads or did know any contacts on anyone in the AAU world, because I did want to get some games. And right away I got a message from Jay, pretty much pointing me in the right direction of someone who I actually reached out to, and I actually have like a couple of games with the person. So no, it worked out real good for me. So
you linked up with Jay and you're gonna be working with him?
Yeah, so he linked me up with a guy named Paolo in New Jersey. Yeah. So I wound up reaching out to him, and then he wound up putting me on a schedule for, I guess he has like the AAU going. So he has me on a schedule for actually Thursday of this week.
Good. I know that name, Paolo. Yeah. Solid official, nice guy. And I'm glad you got connected. So
yeah, no, it's been great. It's actually funny. I actually wanted to, I was going to text you over the weekend because I was actually reading a book, Tales from the Hardwood, and I seen your name pop up in there from Andrew Mariota, I believe.
Yeah,
I seen your name. Yeah, I seen your name pop up there. I was like, oh wow, small world. So I actually met him because we had like a banquet for Board 33. We had a banquet last week Friday, and he was the guest speaker there. So he was passing out his book, and I started reading it. Interesting book. Like I haven't been able to put the book down actually. And I'm skimming through it while I'm reading through it, and then I see your name. I'm like, oh wow! So, and he referenced Crown Ref a lot in there because he talks about what's his name? Drawing a blank.
Roger Ayers.
Yes, Roger Ayers. So he talks about him, and then talks about how he was on the podcast, obviously, and then he references the podcast. But yeah.
Yeah, Andrew's a great guy, good friend, and longtime collaborator. I think I've done 3 total episodes with him. Mm-hmm. I've been on his show, and he was on mine, I think, twice.
Oh, and definitely have to catch those episodes then. Yeah, no, his book is really, really good. It's really a lot of insight, especially me being a new referee. A lot of details, I guess, on his journey. So it's been like really, really good.
He's got a bunch of books. He's written like 3 or 4, maybe. Don't quote me. Maybe 5.
Yeah, no, he has. Because I like went to his website, and he kind of lists the actual books out that he has. So I think he has one, obviously talking about him being a principal, and then I think one, obviously talking about just being a parent, and then this one, obviously, I'm reading this from his point of view of being a referee, and I like it because you don't technically have to be a referee or an official to actually read this book, because he mirrors both worlds, and then he takes like real life scenarios he's gotten on the court, and then he pretty much bridges it to leadership skills that he has and he uses in his everyday life. So it's been really, really good.
And you're going to start to draw a lot of parallels as you start getting deeper in officiating with all of the transferable life skills that you find yourself focusing on, maybe more than you ever did with any other job, or at least, you know, I could say that about myself.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. You know, just to finish about Andrew, one thing I really like about his books is his style of writing, the way he's branded his books. If you notice, they're usually in the form of like 100 tips. or and just very digestible, which is the type of readings that's easy for me.
No, same. I think that's why I'm so intrigued with it, and I haven't been able to put it down because of how it's written, actually. So agreed.
Yeah, definitely. So I know you have questions. I have questions. So, but I want to give you the opportunity to at least start maybe on a topic that you wanted to kind of run off top. Or if not, I can kind of get to some of the things I wanted to ask you.
Yeah. So one off the top of my head, it has to do with I wanted to kind of get your advice on newer refs going to camps. As far as, so I obviously I look at the list and I see all the camps that obviously people are all going to attending to, or that are pretty much going to be in session this in the summertime. So I've seen a couple in New York that I'm like, oh, I would be interested in, being in this camp or, joining this session. But then in the back of my mind, I'm asking myself, should I wait to do camp? So I just wanted to get your advice. As someone who's a newer referee, do you suggest someone wait for these camps, or just kind of go into it? Because obviously, in the back of my mind, I'm going into a camp. I'm not trying to get hired to obviously work a Division I basketball game or a college game at the moment, because obviously I don't feel like I have the experience to do that just yet. I think what I'm trying to get out the camp is obviously some evaluation, just tips, and obviously more education on being a referee. So, it helps me down the line. And that's what I'm trying to get out the camp. But obviously, I'm not trying to be on staff for a college referee. I'm obviously, if someone was to say, you're actually good enough to do it, obviously, who would turn that down? But I don't think at the moment right now, just because I don't have the experience. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just kind of wanted to get your advice. What do you suggest?
Yeah, I'm glad you started here, because it's exactly where I wanted to start. Oh, I wanted to kind of lay out your macro plan. I know as I was reading your bio, you want to possibly get to the MBA, definitely D1. And I want to help, guide you and contribute to that in any way I can. So camp is so important for many reasons, both educationally, instructionally, developmental. But then once you get to the level where you decide you want to try out, then it's important, because that's the platform for you to move up and get hired into new leagues, right? So camp is kind of always a part of the equation for the referee who is constantly trying to climb up. It's probably always going to be in the cards, whether you're doing it now from an instructional point of view, or as you move up going to higher level, league tryouts. And then once you get hired, going to staff camps. So, major part of the journey. So for you, I was thinking I would attack the camp scene this summer and try to go to as many instructional camps as you can. Mm-hmm. Not worry about going to a tryout camp maybe this year. I mean, you can go, and there's no rules on this. Okay. It's important that everybody listening understands that everybody's journey is different. There's no right way to do it. It's just your way.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you go whenever you want. I don't necessarily think you can hurt yourself by going early if that's what you want to do and that's where you aspire to be. I think I've very rarely seen anyone hurt their chances.
Okay. That was my thing.
Yeah, because you're putting yourself out there and you're in it for the long term aspect of it. So you're going to be able to show that growth, that development, that evolution from year one. Don't think about year one. Think about year three when they look back on your year one and say, oh, remember he came in so raw. And now look, he's coachable. Look how much he's grown. So I think there's a lot of benefits to going. So this summer I would try to focus on, it's up to you and your budget and your availability,
So I'm pretty, that's the good thing about my job. I'm pretty available to, obviously, cause I work from home a lot. So I'm able to, travel. And then this is something that I'm invested in. So I not to say that money's not an issue, but I'm not worried too much about the money side of it, obviously, because this is something that I want to invest in. And I think anytime you're invested in your future, I think money should kind of be the last thing you think about if it's something you really want to do.
Would you be interested in getting on a plane?
Yep.
Okay. So two camps come to mind.
Okay.
Let me write these down. Both camps I will be at.
Oh, perfect.
I just posted in the camps channel a camp that's going to happen in May 28th, I believe, to June 1st.
Okay.
That's in Connecticut. That's AJ Ganelli's, don't quote me, hold on, I want to make sure I say it right, Strive Referee Camp.
I'm writing this down, so you don't think I'm just on my phone.
No, I know you are. That's in the camps channel. Okay. If you want to just look at what channel is it?
Yes.
Channel 21.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a couple links in there.
Yeah, I seen that.
Yeah, so AJ is a G League official. He's also a D1 ref.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there'll be an NCAA and pro component to the camp.
Yeah.
There'll be some NBA refs there as well, some Division I clinicians. I'll be there at least 2 days, so I'll get a chance to see work. I'll probably get a chance to, you probably be on my court if I ask, if I make those arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be a great first camp for you, to be honest.
Perfect, yeah.
It's only a couple hours from you up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
You might even be close enough to commute. I don't know. Mm. I don't know if your location, but I'll be commuting. Yep.
Very familiar with Connecticut. Obviously, my sister went to UConn, so I used to visit her a lot going there. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then the second camp, I would recommend Roger Ayers Camp. That's a camp I go to every year. This will be year four. I went once as a camper, and then I went the last 2 years as a clinician. Mm-hmm. Roger has one of the best instructional camps in the country. It's a phenomenal culture and community that he created. He's been doing it over 20 years. Not only that, there'll be probably at least 10 Crown Refs officials there. It's always like a meeting center for a lot of our community members, which is amazing. Again, I'll get to watch you work most likely.
Yeah.
And you're going to grow a lot from those type of experiences. You know, it's important to put yourself around people that are aspiring to do similar things, being around like-minded individuals that you can be inspired from, that you can learn from, you can look up to. And this camp experience provides that type of opportunity. I know you'll come away from it that following week, reflecting on it, like, wow, what an experience. I feel like a newer ref. And those are the type of experiences you got to kind of add in your portfolio as you continue to ascend up.
Yeah. No, I agree. Especially with the part where kind of looking toward, kind of connecting yourself and looking toward someone who's actually trying to do the same thing that you're trying to do. So I agree wholeheartedly. I think anytime you want to progress in anything you're trying to do, obviously you need to surround yourself around people who obviously want the same things.
Mm-hmm. And then if if you wanted to go somewhere else, I mean, we could look deeper into that. You might want to pick a Jersey camp that's on the list.
So I see the one Jersey camp, but it looks like it's invite only. So that was, I think it was one in Atlantic City. So I kind of scratched that one off, obviously, because it's invitation only.
You might want to consider the IABO camp as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure if they have one in Jersey still.
Okay.
Check out where their locations are. But that was actually the first camp I went to.
Okay.
And it provides a great foundation, for growth on top of that, because that's like the black and white basics of officiating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have these three.
Good. Mm-hmm. So the links are on that master camp list. Yeah. You saw we just published the camp list.
Yeah, that's when I was looking on it. I was looking at it this whole week. And then I think his name's Brandon Cruz. I had signed up for one because there's one in New York. Actually, it's actually this weekend. I didn't think that I was going to it was a wait list. And actually, he emailed me today and said if I was interested, I could come aboard this weekend. So that was another reason I wanted to ask you questions. I didn't know if it was too soon to, or
no, I would go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm now. Yeah. This is letting me know, like, at this point, I'm going to go. It's in Hempstead. So it's not that far from me.
Yeah. I mean, this camp is kind of, I would say, like a hybrid almost, because it is a tryout, but Brandon is phenomenal. He's, he's building his community and his kind of grassroots system, right? So that you're going to get a lot of teaching there as well.
Okay.
And that you know, he has the junior college and D3 mm-hmm. In New York City, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that you want to be involved with. So I would make that connection point now.
Yeah.
So you can show that growth and development.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely going to, I told him I just needed to the end of the day to, just to make arrangements, but yeah, I'm definitely going to go this weekend.
And that's this weekend?
Yeah. It's the 6th. Yep. Saturday.
Great. Let me know how it goes.
Oh, definitely.
So, how would you say your first year, you know, as an official went, as you reflect upon, you know, your rookie year in officiating?
So I think it went well. I got a lot of good feedback, from, you know, most of the people I work with, because, you know, one thing I did for every game that I knew was a newer official, I would ask them, like, hey, I would tell them, like, hey, I'm a newer official, so please give me any feedback or any constructive criticism that you have. And most of them just kept saying, no, I did a good job. Keep doing what you're doing. I think most of them were pretty appreciative that I was receptive to getting feedback, because they were saying, you know, it's not like a lot of people who like to get feedback, especially when you're trying to tell them something that they did wrong. A lot of people have egos, and I'm far from it, because obviously you're never going to know everything. So I think it went really well. I was super excited to get on the court. It's actually like, I feel the same way as when I did play basketball. Like, it's not like a nervousness, but I'm like anxious always at the start of the game, and then literally after like a few times up and down the court and I make a call, it's like it goes away, and it's literally the same feeling I used to get when I used to play basketball. So
that's cool.
No, this is it's been great. It's been really great.
That's great, man. Happy mm-hmm. happy for you. It's important you have that base of passion.
Yeah.
You know, in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell obviously the love is there on your end.
Yeah.
So that'll trend up. Speaking of trends, is there any trends in the feedback that you got? Maybe two partners, you know, said the same thing, or what were some of the feedback you got? Anything specific you can share with us?
Yeah, obviously one of the feedbacks, I think early in the year, I think I used to, as far as when I used to be in the lead, like on a free throw, when obviously a team was shooting free throws, one of my partners said, always make sure you look at the bench and just don't put the ball into play until you know your partner is ready. I think it was a couple of times that I was just putting the ball into play, which I think maybe because I was just so anxious to get the game kind of rolling again without not looking at my partner. And that was one thing that my partner said, just always make sure you're looking at your partner. Just kind of glance at him just to make sure he's all right. So that was one thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
Next time you get anxious, I want you to just think of patience and just mm-hmm. Replace it with patience.
Yeah.
That's a good little quick hit and cue for mm-hmm. you. If you're getting, you know, anxiety multiple times, mm-hmm. you know, during the game, just yeah. say to yourself, patience, patience, slow down,
mm-hmm.
ease up, calm down.
Yeah. And then another one, I think early, I used to, let's say a game was, in the beginning of the year, I was anticipating calls versus just letting them happen. And as the year went on, I realized, like, don't anticipate it. If it happens, it happens. Call what you see and not call what you think. And that has helped me like tremendously. Especially like, you know, those bang bang plays where it would look like a foul, but it really isn't a foul. A lot of the times I think I was calling those early and just kind of just not letting the play itself out. And I think a lot of the advice that I got was just, you know, relax and let the play itself out. Don't be such in a rush to make a call.
So the exact thing you're saying, let's add more context and remember this term.
Mm-hmm.
Let plays start, develop, finish,
mm-hmm.
and then decide.
Yeah.
So those four things.
Mm-hmm.
Start, develop, finish, and decide.
Yeah.
Notice I paused in mm-hmm. between finish and decide. Because you need that breath sometimes in order to take in more information.
Mm-hmm.
This way you could make the best decision on that play.
Yeah.
And by slowing down, you're allowing for more information.
Agreed.
For more of an assessment of the contact.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big. I don't know if you've seen the post, like don't be reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
you know, don't react to contact.
Yeah.
Don't blow the whistle immediately upon contact. I mean, if it's you know,
warranted of it,
intentional or flagrant, or mm-hmm. if it's obvious or plays, you know, some plays we need a quick whistle. You got to kill mm-hmm. it right away. But we're speaking about patience right now and having those plays that require a patient whistle. So just waiting as long as you can to make that decision is big. I'm really big on patience and adding more and more patience as I continue to, you know, age up in this biz.
I think that's the biggest thing, patience as a referee, just patience in everything. I think once you slow the game down, I think everything becomes a little bit more easy. I think obviously in the beginning, like everything's moving like 150 miles per hour, especially like the high school games. I'm like, yeah, this is really fast. But after a couple of games, like two games, I'm like, oh, it's not as fast as I thought it was, but yeah.
It's like the difference between playing 2K in Hall of Fame mode or mm-hmm. rookie mode.
Right.
Rookie mode, obviously a lot easier. We want to mm-hmm. ref like it's we're seeing it in rookie mode, but mm-hmm. we want to ref like we're going to the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. great example.
Thank you. So what were some of the biggest challenges you faced this year? Any of them stand out, and how did you address that?
Challenges. I think one of the challenges was probably making sure you and your partners are on the same page. I think that was one of the challenges.
Broke up real quick. Just go back to the beginning of that.
I think one of the challenges that I got this year was just making sure you and your partner are on the same page. I think, and you can help that by, you know, pregame talks, constant communication during the game, and then even communication after the game. I think sometimes I got frustrated because obviously this is something that there was sometimes I was reffing games because obviously this is something that I want to do long term, but you get your partners who sometimes this is not obviously something they want to do long term. Maybe they're just in it for a check or just to do something. So they're not putting, I want to say, 100% energy into it. So sometimes I get a little frustrated with that, especially like, you know, hustling down the court, making calls that you know are like not in the area, or making calls that they know they couldn't see because they're not hustling to that particular spot. So I think that was where some of my frustration was coming. But I think just kind of communicating with them, it helped. Because when I seen that, it was more so just having a conversation like, hey, you have to get to your spot if you want to make a right call. So I just think just communication helps.
So we're on the topic of partnering. You know, we have a great channel too for partnering. We have a lot of, you know, in-depth discussions about mm-hmm. working with different people, how to be a great partner. Some of our principles are being the partner that everybody wants to work with, being a great partner to everybody you work with, no matter if they're a great partner to you, mm-hmm. being somebody that you can trust, no matter if you can feel like you can trust your partner, being like super integral, not letting anybody get you frustrated. Right. And this is part of the growing pains mm-hmm. of officiating, because we've all been there. We've all like gotten pissed at partners and like been frustrated about their performance. But let's get back to another theme. Don't mm-hmm. judge your partner's performance. We do that way too often, especially during the game. Like mm-hmm. we're judging if they made a correct mm-hmm. call or not, when that's not our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that can only hurt you. Because that can only mm-hmm. hurt you, because then you're bringing in so much more emotion into your thought process. Mm-hmm. And the time to judge your partner is when you are breaking down film in your lab. Then you could judge your partner's calls all you want in a constructive way and learn from their mistakes and learn from what they did well. But during the game, focus your best on not focusing on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned not being in position. Well, that's inexcusable, right? Mm-hmm. But you're also speaking about rec, AAU culture type of games.
Yeah.
Where you're going, it's official. Right? Yeah. These are official games. And that doesn't mean you're going to work with perfect partners all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm speaking about varsity games, mm-hmm. getting to college. Everybody in college, mostly everyone there loves officiating and mm-hmm. wants to be great for the most yeah. part. So mm-hmm. it's a much different culture. Right. Agreed. So now you're in year one, you're working a lot of games, you're going to different tournaments, you're bouncing around, working with a ton of different refs. As you mentioned, not everyone loves it, and that's okay. We have to stop mm-hmm. judging them. If they want to come in and make money and use it as a side hustle, we have to stop judging them.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I understand with that comes a lack of skills a lot, a lack of interest, mm-hmm. a lack of passion, but we can't allow that to throw off ours.
Yeah.
So to take this away from this conversation, don't get frustrated with any other partners you work with ever again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even if they like show you up, even if they throw you under the bus, like this gets down to like mental toughness and mm-hmm. not being, having thick skin and not letting it get us to a negative emotional space.
Yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm. And these are, you know, that's why I love having a partnering channel, because everybody has these type of questions and experiences, and it usually rubs us all the wrong way when we first encounter them. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to have sour mm-hmm. taste in our mouth. And it gets back to being the bigger person. This is why also I talk like so much about like kindness and positivity. And when you're in those spaces, you're not being critical of your partners, even if it's justified.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. That's good. This is good. Take this with you. Mm-hmm. Any situations stand out from your year? Any difficult plays that were hard for the crew to handle, or maybe you know, regretted how you guys did it?
Yeah, so two stand out. So the first was actually like the first game of the season. Close game. I was reffing in Staten Island. A team was down two points. They grabbed the rebound after a missed shot, and they called the timeout. My partner, who was the referee on call, granted the timeout to them, and then came up to the coach and said, "Did you want the option to move the ball to the half court line?" And at the time, I knew that wasn't a rule. Like, I was like, "I don't think you can do that. This is not like the NBA. You can't do that." So when I brought it to his attention, when I pulled him to the side and I was like, I don't think you can advance the ball. But obviously he's been a referee longer than I was. So he kept saying, it is a rule. You can do it. So it was my first game literally of the high school season. So at that point I was just like, okay, well, if this is something he's passionate about and he was adamant about it, I was like, I'll just go with his call. After the game, we realized, you know, this was not a good call. Obviously he was wrong. He apologized to me. It's like, yeah, that was my mistake. But he did contact, I guess, one of his friends who's actually a referee, and the person let him know, like, no, you can't do that. Good thing the team that, you know, he granted the timeout to didn't end up winning the game. But the coach from the opposite team was livid. Like, I remember him just losing his mind. But again, that's something that stands out. I just didn't know how to handle it, obviously, because I was a newer referee and he had some seniority over me. So I just didn't know how to go about telling him, like, no, that is incorrect. But
my least favorite thing you said was when your partner had to call a friend to see if the rule was correct. Mm-hmm. So this gets to the point that I want to share with you is, when we're talking about rules, it should be straight from the book. You should not mm-hmm. trust any other human beings.
Yeah.
Like, don't call a friend to ask them what the rule is when the mm-hmm. book is on your phone.
Mm-hmm. You know? And he carried it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just, you know, that's why I recommend having the NFHS rule book, a digital copy on your phone. You can search, use the search bar, and even for a quick lookup. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll help you find a rule, you know, quicker. But anytime we mess up a rule play or we're not 100% on the rule, this should prompt us when the game is over to then open up the book to then confirm or learn what the correct ruling should be. Mm-hmm. and the language in the book.
Yeah.
Also, you know, once you start to gain 100% rules knowledge, you'll have the confidence to be able to articulate in that moment that that's not the correct ruling.
Yeah.
But since you are unsure yourself, then you're not going to be proactive and be 100%, right? Mm-hmm. And have any kind of real confidence.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was one I wish I could get back. But not saying it worked itself out, but I'm glad that the team was able to still come away with the win.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to re-echo one of like my least favorite things to hear. And I don't feel cringeworthy over things, but when I do hear a ref say, "Oh, I asked my friend and he said that was the correct rule," I'm like, nah, that's not it.
That's literally it.
So, yeah. Just get in that book anytime there's a rule question and you be the person that is kind of leading the charge versus phoning a friend.
Yeah. That's what he really said. And then the second, I think, situation that stands out, I had a game, last game of the season, a JV game, and it was like 1.5 seconds left on the clock, and the team was actually down by 1 point, well, two points, I'm sorry. The team was down 2 points. Away team was down 2 points. They were inbounding the ball. I was in the trail position, inbounding the actual basketball. The away team then passes the ball to one of the team members. He shoots the ball. And mind you, this is 1.8 seconds. I didn't look at the clock to make sure that the clock actually started. So he shot the ball at 1.8 seconds. Obviously, he missed his shot. But then the away team then gets the ball and lays the ball up. And then they score the goal, score the goal. So I wind up counting the basket, saying that it was good. After looking at some film and realizing like that was actually, I should have waived it because obviously the clock didn't start right on time. So that was something that sticked out to my mind, like always pay attention to the clock. But it was just that I was just trying to make sure that no one got fouled. I was trying to make sure that if it was a 2 point attempt or a 1 point attempt, that was a lot going on. So I think it was just my mistake that I wasn't being aware of the actual clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it happens. You know, that I had a play in my season where I was not super clock aware, and it was a late game shot clock situation, and it was an error that I made, and I wound up putting the team at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So we got to really use self-talk in those moments and just kind of remind yourself to look.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you get to different markers on the court, and that is your prompt to look up. Every time you cross the mid-court line, you're looking up. Every time you cross the end line and lead, you're looking up. You know, every rebound, every shot, looking up. Every new possession, looking up. So muscle memory, building out that muscle memory so where you're locked in on having high clock awareness.
Yeah, that one stung a bit. I remember going home thinking to myself, like, I messed up because the team actually wound up winning the game in overtime. So I was just so upset. Like, yeah, for a couple of days. But I did get some good feedback, obviously, from someone who was there, who's a referee as well. It was kind of just saying, you know, stuff like this happens. It's just how you go about it after it happens to you. Just making sure it doesn't happen again, and just learning from these mistakes. So, I mean, that made me feel a little bit better about myself, but I was a little down on myself for a couple of days.
I know the feeling because, you know, we're so passionate and we want to do great. So when that doesn't occur, then naturally there's that disappointment. But that's one thing I'm leaning into as I mature is to really file everything as a plus.
Yeah.
Like nothing gets filed that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was in the moment. It's just an opportunity to learn and be better from.
Mm-hmm.
We get so stuck on the mistakes we make and we let it sting and burn for way too long. You know, and you're still, you know, year one. So it's tough to not be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are just, this is just experience. This is just repetition, taking your punches, failing and succeeding, you know. But as you start to mature, let's file everything as a plus. Yeah. Nothing hurts you. Nothing you should be thinking about 3 weeks later. Should not be thinking about plays 3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was tough. But those are the two situations that stick out. Everything else was pretty pretty straightforward, and everything was pretty good this season.
What do you think some of your strengths are? What do you what part of your game do you feel most confident about?
I think that my communication with coaches, especially like when the coaches are real temperamental and yelling, I think I'm pretty good at kind of calming down coaches. And kind of relating to them and just explaining, obviously, because if I make a call, I'm able to articulate the reason behind the call and why I made the call. I think a lot of times when you're able to do that and tell the coach that, they're a little bit more understanding rather than you just saying, I made the call, coach, that's it, or that's enough. I try not to say that to coaches, like, that's enough. That's the one thing I don't ever want to say to a coach, because I understand sometimes you're not yelling at me. You're just talking loudly. And I understand in the middle of a basketball game, sometimes it's frustrating when your team is not playing as well as you think they should be playing. And obviously you need someone to blame. So most of the time it's always going to be the ref. I always go into games knowing that you're never going to get 100% of these calls right. In their eyes, like, you're always going to be wrong in their eyes. So when you realize that, and just communicating with the coaches, I think that's one of my strengths, communicating with the coaches.
Most first year officials would not give that answer. How do you think you've advanced that skill set so early in your career?
I think just in my everyday life, obviously I have a fiance that I have to communicate with. So, you know, that's the biggest thing.
That's the hardest thing.
It's the hardest thing. I think so. When you're with your partner who you live with, that's the hardest thing. So I think it's a little bit more easier for someone that I don't necessarily know to talk to them, you know, and give them the courtesy to listen to why they're actually mad. I think a lot of times when coaches are mad, they just want someone to listen to. So a lot of times I'm not even talking. Most of the time I'm just trying to understand why they're so upset. And I try to make it brief, obviously, because I have a game to ref. So just kind of understanding what's the reason why they're mad and just giving them an explanation on why I made the call. Obviously, I'm not going to keep explaining myself every call I make, because no one can do that. But, you know, just giving them the courtesy and just, you know, sometimes I'll come to them and explain why I made that call. And then if, you know, obviously, if this is a bad call on my part, you know, I have no problem in telling the coach I made a mistake on that one, but I'll do better and get it right the next go around. Not saying that I'm looking for a foul for the coach, but, you know, I won't miss the next call.
So it sounds like you have a very solid base of listening skills, empathy, and just, you know, being able to show compassion and allow the coaches to, you know, vent their frustration. One thing that comes to mind when I hear you explain some of that is when you mention, oh, I let them, you know, they're yelling, you know, and you're good at de-escalating, which is an amazing skill, but that they should not be yelling at you consistently. Yeah.
Like, no.
We don't want to de-escalate a technical foul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? So we don't want to lend an ear when mm-hmm. a coach is being disrespectful.
Yeah. That's one thing. Most of the times that it's never disrespect. So that's why, like, I can differentiate the two, where it's disrespect or it's just, you're just talking aggressively, not in a manner where I'm like, you're being disrespectful, but more so in a manner like, I just need you to listen to what I'm saying. So yeah, no, absolutely. Like, no, I'm not allowing, you know, anyone to just talk loudly to me and disrespect me. No.
Yeah. And we're trying to change the culture too. So we, mm-hmm. you know, it starts with the new generation of officials and not being so accepting of the past 80 years of basketball culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, it's like a norm. Oh yeah, the coach is going to yell at the ref. Well, it doesn't have to be like that forever.
Yeah,
and
no.
More strong-minded officials that can come run the game respectfully mm-hmm. and be able to, you know, not only listen, But provide effective responses in game management. That's going to help the game.
Yeah.
And we're not a punching bag. Like, we have to stop looking at ourselves as, oh, the coach is frustrated at his team, so he can yell at me. He could take it out of me. That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, coach tried to tell me that this year. He was shouting at me. I went and gave him a rapid response. Told him I'm very approachable if you have a question, but please don't shout across the court. That's unprofessional, and we're not going to tolerate that tonight. And then, of course, they always, then he said, you know, oh, I was just frustrated at my team. And I said, you know what, coach? And I smiled. I said, that's an excuse. I said, that's not a good excuse. And he kind of like, yeah, gave me the, you're right. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough. A lot of people actually come to my games. Like, I have like friends sometimes, they come to my games and they're like, I don't know how you guys, how do you guys deal with it?
And you've listened to some of the rapid responses?
No, not any of the rapid responses. I've just been on the podcast.
Well, the rapid responses content is filtered in the podcast as
well. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So yes.
Well, just to give you more context, rapid responses is a 15-part podcast series that we have available on Patreon and Spotify, but it's also a live session that we do with the mentor community probably every 2 months. So it's a live session that you'll be able to attend. But anytime I'm talking about coaching content and how to respond and game manage, it all is filed under what we call rapid responses. Yeah. So you can find a lot of good resources on Patreon in the collections folder that says rapid responses. There's podcasts, there's videos, there's slides, other documents. So that's really the blueprint on how to handle coaches effectively, I think, in 2024. So I would recommend, you know, diving in there as much as you can.
Oh, definitely.
How's your rule studying going?
It's good. It's good. Obviously, it's tough to obviously memorize everything, but I do try to get in there at least 2 to 3 times a week just to kind of look through my rule book just to make sure I'm staying on top of things. Yeah, so no, I think I'm doing pretty well, especially with rules. It's not many times in a game where I'm thinking about a rule and saying to myself, is that correct or isn't that correct? Most of the time, I think I'm pretty aware of the rule changes and, you know, the rules.
You know, I was speaking with an official last night who didn't have a great base of rules knowledge, you know, and that's really the gateway to everything.
Yeah.
Like, we could sit here and talk about effective responses for coaches and how to be a super patient play caller and how to handle situation ABC. But if we don't have a strong base of rules knowledge, then nothing's going to work. It's, you know, we're going to crash.
Yeah.
So it really starts there. That's going to give you so much more confidence and command on the court when you have command of that language that's in the book.
Yeah.
And I'm just 100 on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly the most important, I think. I mean, you have to know the rules. Like, I don't think there's any way around it. Like, you have to know the rules. Because if you don't know the rules, obviously you won't be able to effectively communicate with coaches on situations that happen. Because if a coach is telling you something and they know the rules and you don't, you've already lost.
Yeah, so try to open up the book, like, after a game, especially if something popped up that you needed clarification on.
Yeah.
That's always a great way to just kind of bring the book to life, is when the real in-game scenarios and situations that we encounter.
Yeah.
You know, kind of failing at it or being unsure at it, and then going and hitting the book and then kind of downloading that information and then rinsing and repeating it. Great way to grow there. So you said you have, you would say you're pretty solid with your conflict resolution skills.
Yeah.
De-escalating.
Yeah. I like to say that's one of the strengths of mine.
Where else did you gain those skills off the court?
I just think school and just think school, obviously just being around friends and family. I think it's just normal when you're around people a lot. And then at work, also at work. I mean, I'm not de-escalating conflict so much at work, but I think it helps in work settings when you're talking to your manager for, you know, things that you don't like, or if you guys have some type of disagreements. So I think that work has also helped me. So I would say just my everyday life, obviously with my fiance, and just everyday life.
Yeah. And what about your like work schedule as far as how many games you're doing? Are you working during the week? You doing men's league? Weekends? Take me through that.
So right now it's just weekends. I would like to start getting more, obviously, because I have the time after work. Even like during the season, I'd probably do like at my busiest during the season, I would do 3 games during the week, and then on the weekends I would be booked during the weekends on 4 games actually during the during the week. So Monday through Fridays, probably 4 games, and then during the weekends I would be booked on Saturdays and Sundays. So like that, like the heart of like December and January, I was super super busy.
Mm-hmm. What about April, May, June?
So summer, right now, like, it hasn't been as busy. I've gotten like games here and there. This week I got some games on Thursday, I'm just still looking around to see if anyone needs help, or just anywhere I could fit in or get in. Obviously this weekend I'm going to go to camp. So I'll be busy with that. But yeah.
How many games have you reffed, would you say, overall?
Overall, maybe like 70 to 80 games. I mean, I would even say more than that, honestly. I would say closer to a little over maybe 100 games this season.
In your first 365 days, have you done a full year?
No, because I started in September.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty solid. So I'm just trying to gather how much experience you have, how many games you're reffing, because, one major way to grow, obviously, is more time on the court, hours spent, obvious, with everything. Mm-hmm. But, I would recommend trying to work a couple hundred games a year minimum, just to give you context. In year one, I have the stats here. Year one was kind of like I only worked half the year. But year two is when I really started working a lot. I kept track of all my games. Year two, I worked a total of 650 games. Oof. Year three, I worked over 630 games. Mm-hmm. So like that 2-year window, I went so hard, pedal to the floor, and I just felt all the breakthroughs I was making. Because that's like 4 seasons into one. Mm-hmm. So 3 years into reffing, I really feel like I'm a 7-year ref.
Yeah.
So I would try to get as many games as you can.
No, I agree. That's the plan right now. Just trying to get on the court. I think it doesn't even, honestly, I'm not even worried about like where. It's just more so like if it's in the vicinity of me driving, like I'm there. So
I would recommend maybe getting into men's leagues too. Mm-hmm. Thought about that?
Yeah. Actually, a couple of people that I worked with had some AAU games 2 weeks ago, and a referee actually said he had some men's league games on Monday nights, so she should be reaching out to me pretty soon about that. So,
how many assigners do you know?
I'm trying to think. I worked this year with about 8 or 9 assigners. In New Jersey, and then I did some obviously CYO in Staten Island. So, yeah, like 8 or 9 assigners I worked with this year.
How far are you from the Bronx?
Like 40 minutes. That's where I'm from. I grew up in the Bronx, so like 40 minutes.
I know that. Minutes. You're more a little central Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. No, because I was just thinking I have an assigner in the Bronx and Westchester and Manhattan, if you want me to pass you along that contact.
Please, please do.
Yeah, he does a ton of games. So if you wanted to drive to Westchester, you could probably work every weekend.
Oh, that's yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Because I'm in the Bronx when I'm visiting family, so no, that works.
All right, so when we get off, I'll send you his contact. You should reach out to him, let him know where you're from, how long you've been reffing, and that you're looking to work games. So
okay, yeah, no, that works.
I know I've asked you a bunch of questions. You asked me in the first question about camp, but yeah. I'd like to get to some other things you wanted to discuss.
Yeah. So how long have you actually been reffing yourself?
I got certified in 2011, and I started really working games in 2012. So I feel like 2012 is the start of my career.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? 13? I'm really bad at math. I never know if it's 12, 13, or 14 years.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on, I guess, so the month.
I'll pick the one in the middle, 13 years.
Nice. And what were you, I guess you just did it because you just wanted to do it. Did you have goals in mind? That you were trying to reach,
like before I got into reffing,
yeah, or in now as well. So both, I say,
yeah.
What were your goals?
I got into it for the money, and because I thought, you know, being around basketball is a great side hustle. Like that would be a great way to spend your time of getting paid. Like so, obviously, I went in for the financial implications because I was, I'm a teacher now. So at the time I was still subbing. So I was kind of bouncing around. So I was looking for like night work. And once the officiating, my mom actually recommended it because she worked for an athletic director. So she was speaking to a lot of refs on a daily basis, confirming games for multiple sports. So she gave me the recommendation, like you should be a ref. And, so I signed up, took the class, was not in love with it. Didn't really connect with, I don't think I had a great attitude at that time in my life or not nearly where I'm at now. I wasn't as optimistic. So, you know, I didn't really know what I was getting into. I didn't know how I would like it because I was a player and I didn't think too fondly of refs. I mean, I was never disrespectful. I never said a word to the refs when I played.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think too highly of officiating.
You're right.
It didn't appeal to me. It didn't seem cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, but once I started to work a lot of games and got linked up with an assigner who was kind of feeding me, sparked that passion in me. And then I wanted to, my eyes opened up and wanted to do bigger things and work bigger leagues and see how far I could take my skills. You know, so that's a little bit about how I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then started to really fall in love with it and want to get better and tried out for college and tried to, you know, move up as much as I could up the NCAA ladder and stumbled upon Crown Refs in 2018 and have been trying to give back in the biggest way I know how.
Yeah. Oh, this is really, really good.
You know, it's cool to hear everybody else's journey because we all get into it for different reasons.
Yeah,
you know, we all stumble upon it and have our own kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to be riding the wave of the sport of basketball in our own little lane of officiating.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You know, basketball is just bigger than ever. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I didn't realize it when I was, you know, first couple of years in. 12, 13, 14. But each year I'm like, wow, this sport that I grew up loving and always viewed it as the best sport is continuing to grow. Wow. What a great opportunity.
No, I agree.
And now you see the women's game hitting new peaks. So it's just like it's blowing insane. Up the overall sport even more.
Yeah. It's insane. Especially the college women. Mm-hmm. Obviously the game is even bigger, I would say, than the men's side.
Yeah, who would have thought that, right? It's beautiful to see. It really is.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I guess the second question I would have is what advice, I guess, would you give your younger self when you first got into it?
You know, find the right group of people that are like-minded and want to, you know, achieve similar things than you. I would say back to what I told you earlier on the call, like don't judge your partner's calls. And the bigger thing of that is just being a great partner to everybody. I didn't know about that first couple of years. Like I would, you know, work with somebody who I didn't think was great and maybe go talk trash to my friend about him. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's just something like I never do anymore. I don't spend zero time talking bad about any other human being.
Yeah.
In life, like period,
mm-hmm.
period. So learning like the emotional side of it. And I would just kind of tell myself to focus on emotional intelligence and all of the life, kind of where we started with all the life transferable skills that mm-hmm. are beneficial on and off the court, but just to lean into emotional intelligence. Those are just some things that come to mind.
That's good. I mean, those are like the three biggest ones, questions I had. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because being a new referee, I just wanted to understand, you know, what advice that you have. But
yeah, I would also lean into watching film. You know, I didn't watch film until probably like my third year.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't even on my radar. Partially because it wasn't nearly as accessible as it is now. But I would say for you, like, have you seen yourself ref yet?
Yeah.
Okay. So just, you know, being in your own lab as much as possible, you know, mm-hmm. I started a film review service. And that would have never been possible had I not have had hundreds of, you know, film sessions
with
a laptop, computer, pen and pad, and rewinding and pausing the game hundreds of times and really dissecting myself and mm-hmm. becoming my best critic. And here's another thing, being a positive critic of yourself, even when you're making mistakes, like not having an emotional reaction. What emotional reaction is, oh, I sucked right there. Or, mm-hmm. oh, that was such a terrible call. That's you're not providing any context to what occurred. You're just, you know, being negatively critiquing yourself. Mm-hmm. So just get more specific. Oh, I need to be more patient on that play. If I would have rotated over sooner, I would have had an open look and I wouldn't have been stacked. And that's why I missed the call. That's so much better than that was a terrible call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people bash themselves, you know, even today I'm in the store and, I introduced myself to the gentleman at the register and, you know, he's like, oh, I might forget your name. I'm terrible with names. And do you know how many times I've said that line?
Mm-hmm.
I said it probably up until a month ago.
Yeah.
But the corrections I'm trying to make now is instead of me saying I'm terrible at names, hey, I struggle a little bit with names too, but I'm improving. Like I'm a work in progress.
Yeah.
So always that optimistic viewpoint, I think is really important when you're being critical of yourself.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Because bashing is just not productive.
At all.
You know, you're leading with fear.
You're not getting anywhere doing that.
You know, you're leading with fear. This should be fun. This should be easy. You know, this is basketball. This is something we get to do. You know, extra. In addition to everything in our lives. So. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing.
Yeah, I agree. Watch more basketball. It's just to be into the game.
Mm-hmm. So I was thinking next time we could start watching some of your film. Do you have a game in mind that we could break down?
So I actually only seen one game film. So I guess the one that I have, we can break that down.
What kind of game is that?
That was a CYO game. So it was a playoff game. It was a 8th grade semifinal game.
Okay. Nice.
So, yeah, we can break that down.
Yeah, most important thing is just, you know, seeing you work a game where you blow the whistle. Like, mm-hmm. There's only so much we can get out of watching a game where you have just great no calls and only blow the whistle one time.
Yeah.
As far as, like, breaking down a game. Like, you just mm-hmm. want to see that official, you know, be active, so. I look forward to watching your work, and helping you add piece by piece these skills as we start to build them up. You know, you're in a good spot where you're building out that foundation and being a part of the community in year one, I think is a testament to you and you investing in yourself and putting yourself in a great position to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, I was speaking to a first year ref today. I'm like, you know, you're getting involved with Crown Refs so early in your career. There was no Crown Refs, you know, in my year one, year two, year three. Like we just didn't have this. So mm-hmm. It's a great benefit to our officials that we get to be around each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I couldn't imagine just kind of going through this process just, you know, by myself. It's obviously important to connect with people who obviously are like-minded and want the same things that you want.
Yep, can't do it alone. That's the one thing. No one has ever been great at this, doing it by themselves. Just not possible. So yeah. We all need to lift and pull each other up, and that's what we're here doing now. So it was a great jamming with you tonight. I hope this was helpful. I hope you have some takeaways. We did record it, so it's always good to go back and be able to listen to it and break it down again. So I look forward to sharing that with you and the world.
Oh, nice. Great. No, I'm excited.
All right, Ben, have a great night, man. I look forward to seeing you next time and look forward to seeing you in the community on one of the live calls. We have a call this Wednesday if you're around.
Yeah, I can jump on Wednesday.
I mean, with another Ben.
Yeah, oh, perfect. perfect. And then also, obviously, when you get a chance, you can send me, I guess, those assigners' names that you have.
Yep, I'll do it right now.
Oh, perfect. And then I'll just reach out.
Sounds good, man. Have a great night.
Oh, you too. Thank you again.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.
This episode of the Crown Refs Podcast is brought to you by RefereeStore.com. To save 15% on all United Attire products, enter CROWN15 at checkout. We hope you enjoy this episode, and do us one last favor before you listen. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, Johnny Gleese reaching out. We're going knee tuck. Comfortable feel, you know, easy to put on. In the locker room before a game, I'll hang my shirt up, put them on the shirt. Once you pop your shirt on, after you're done with stretching and warming up, you know, they clip real quick. You can have a little slide band to tighten them up and down. I like to go tight, just like a sneaker. When you place your shoes up, you like it tight. It's going to loosen up after the game goes, as you run, as your muscles flex. And they never ride up. Some, you know, I've had good success with these, keeping my shirt in. When you're at the free throw line, watching the game, you don't want to be messing with your shirt, messing with your pants. Knee tucks are, you know, the way that helps us to not do that.